We'll do it live on Wrestlers. Pastor Michael, we were busying ourselves recording non-reaction content. And I think you will enjoy it if you enjoy our Apostles' Creed episodes. If you don't enjoy those episodes and skip over them and wait for reaction content, you will be skipping over things this time of the year. I think you'll enjoy them. But Pastor Michael, while we were doing that, one of these patrons we have, which you can join for $3 a month, interrupted us, tempted us, dare I say, to do something other than what we were here to do.
Yes. And we're doing it live now.
He sent us a video clip.
This is on the Patreon group chat, which, by the way, if you're not on the Patreon, this is what you're missing out on, is we share this kind of stuff. And we got it on the group chat. And I saw it, and I started to watch it for a second while Matt was changing his laundry over, because he's obviously recording in a basement. And yeah. I was like, we got to just do it live. No watching it ahead of time. I watched maybe the first 10 seconds, and I thought, there's no way that we cannot just do this right now.
So, Pastor Michael, let's, before we play this, do two pieces of thing. I want to say two things about this clip. One, we have an episode. I will maybe try and go find it, from when we were covering the rise and fall of Mars Hill, because they geniusly cover this sermon in it. And now what's amazing is they describe that he did this, had this moment happen. Was it in 5 services? Right.
Yeah, and it was multiple services
where he gets overwhelmed and like he screams at the top of his lung, like, clearly doing something performative. So if you want to hear like a discussion of like what that means, you can go find that clip. I'll try and put it in the show notes if possible. The other thing is I and we talked about it back then, Pastor Michael, this particular clip is probably, he calls it his most controversial. This is his most viral moment ever.
Yes, his most
even
viral
more
for
than
sure.
The Hamas and Israel stuff from just last year. But Pastor Michael, this clip for me was one of the most personally impactful things I have I watched as a young man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this, right? That this was something that did have a positive impact on us. So we're not coming into this like this was just the worst thing that ever happened to us. I can't believe this was done. Now I look back on it and I think, yeah, it's emotionally manipulative to do that.
It was preferred.
But
obviously
did God use it in my life? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so I sent this.
Look at us being all balanced.
I know.
I
sent the clip where Pastor Mark Driscoll screamed, "How dare you," to like all of my friends, saying, like, this, like, it is time.
You have to watch this.
Like, it is time for us to repent and be men. And so I just want Pastor Mark Driscoll and whatever legal counsel he might have to remember these very positive comments we've made
right from the start. No matter what happens from this point on, it started out positive.
We're non-libelous.
Non-libelous.
So here we go.
Pastor Mark here. Some years ago, I had a clip that kind of went viral before there was viral. They put it on the radio.
2 days ago.
Okay, so it is fresh.
It was from a Men in Marriage series in 1st and 2nd Peter, and I think it was like 15 years ago.
How dare you? Just still, what a, still such a great clip, man. Dude, we are getting the like the dramatic bad stuff music. Like, but man, I still listen to that. Like, I could have that be like my alarm still. Like every morning.
Yeah, you wake up to it.
Oh man. So someone just said the HDY. We need HDY exclamation point merch. How dare you merch? HDY exclamation point merch. Oh, that would be a great idea. We will get on to that.
We will get on that.
So
merch.
I'll just be honest with you. This is just kind of off the cuff. Here was the story behind
Pastor Michael. Do you think like his shouting at screaming at the top of his lungs was a out of control, just an emotional moment? Do you think this in the same way, this is a truly he's off the cuff and was like, why don't we talk about this, Pastor Mark, which is what his, you know, son-in-law calls him all the time.
I have my doubts. I have my doubts that this is not in some way prepared. It's being filmed, and obviously he's filming other things probably, but had he been thinking about it before, like, yeah, I don't think it's totally off the cuff. This, by the way, I had a moment once where, you know, for a long time, I feel like I just would have listened whenever, you know, a preacher would say, you know, I wasn't planning to do this, but here's this. I would just like, yeah, that's probably true. Even though I'm a naturally pretty cynical and skeptical person in heart. You know, I love everybody. I just am going to be skeptical and critical of anything that you say or do. And so anyway, but then I was at a, you know, an event. I happened to be on the marketing team that filmed things at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, where I got my seminary degree, both for the college chapel and for the seminary chapel. And there's a well-known guy. I can't even remember his name right now. Charlie Dates. Some people know that name. So he very famously pretty recently left the Southern Baptist Convention, I think his church did. And everybody on campus loved this guy. And he was when you listen to him, it's like listening to old Driscoll, right? Mm. Like where there is something compelling about the kind of rhetoric, the kind of speaking that this guy would do. It's a very different style, by the way. But I just remember, and I happened to be at both chapels, which most people weren't. Although some of the people that spoke so highly of him were and kept speaking highly of him. But he, you know, at the end of both of his sermons, he started to go off and say, you know what, I'm really feeling the Holy Spirit and I wasn't planning to do this. But here I go on this, you know, rant about Christ. It was about Christ, but it was just a very clearly rehearsed bit about Christ. And the first time I heard it, I thought maybe this is actually unrehearsed. Maybe this really is spontaneous and there's something really cool about that, you know, that he kind of went off script and is just doing it. And then he did it again the next day.
Yeah.
The same thing. He said, here, I'm getting a call in the middle of us recording.
Yep. Now I will say that again, I don't want to be too picky on this, even though it's fun, right? We just recorded something that will probably just be for patrons on He Descended Into Hell. And I made a comment at one point, I was like, I, you know, I was like saying a date and I'm like, you know, I'm not really like, I'm kind of speaking off the top of my head, right? Now I had notes open, right? But I hadn't like planned out, right? I was trying to communicate. I didn't research like the exact dates or whatever, right? Maybe the notes and the blog post I had, right? So, you know, there's me confessing, right? It's a general figure of speech, but.
Do I think that it's rehearsed? Yes. That's all my story was to say. I just assume it's rehearsed at this point.
All right, here we go. I'm, of course, getting texts. We're just, these are just.
And for my critics and enemies that have used it, shame on you. But here's the truth.
By the way, not shame on us. We talked about how great it was. So we are coming into this with no shame, no guilt, no shame.
My wife, Grace, who I met at 17 on one of our first dates, there was a guy stalking her and tried to run me over with a motorcycle. We weren't dating, we were just friends.
Man, this took a turn.
It did.
I'm not gonna lie, this really took a turn.
Now, what's obviously unfortunate is, you know, it's of course gonna be impossible for me to know how many of those stories are true. Along the way, I don't know how that's gonna get us to from 17 to him preaching in his 30s in front of thousands of people, but I guess we'll find out.
And I got in the middle to protect her and was really worried about her safety. And then some years later, we were married and started ministry.
Am I allowed to just say Mark Driscoll introduced this clip with, there was this one time I knocked an assailant off a moving motorcycle to protect my wife. Like the flex of all flexes. Like I was worried about her. As I knock someone off a motorcycle.
It does make you sound really cool.
It does.
You know, so far I'm sympathetic, right?
History and had kids and Grace had given birth to our our fifth child, a beautiful baby boy who's now a high school senior. And we were sitting upstairs in our bedroom. She was folding laundry and we were visiting. And I asked her, I said, let me just ask you some questions. So I started asking questions about that previous relationship with that person who had stalked her, and I had to literally get in the way to physically protect her. And she started telling me some specific details of some things that had happened to her before I met her that I had never known. And at this point, you know, we'd been married for, I don't even know. So our son would have been, maybe close to 20 years at that time. I don't even know. And as she started answering the questions, she was busy folding the laundry. And I just started, I was weeping uncontrollably because it dawned on me that my best friend who I care the most about, she was a sexual assault victim many times and repeatedly, and it just wrecked me. I grew up in a dangerous neighborhood, Green River Killer, Ted Bundy, prostitutes. One of the gals that was murdered was my buddy's friend, and she was turning tricks. And sometimes I would be driving to work on what's called Pacific Highway, and some of the gals that were out prostituting were gals from my high school. I mean, I knew these gals. And it was a horrible situation. A couple of strip clubs within walking distance in my house, massage parlors, hourly rate. And so I just saw the evil that men did to women, and it just wrecked me. And I had two sisters as well. So then to hear that this kind of violence had happened to my wife, it just broke me and triggered me. And we got Grace some help. And I started at that time researching trauma and abuse and assault. And a lot of what we know today is really new information on these issues. And this was a while ago, so there wasn't as much written. I read as much as I could on sexual assault and trauma and met with counselors and was trying to figure out a way to help my my best friend just kind of recover from what she had been through. And so we were processing a lot of that as a married couple, and issues like disassociation and trauma triggers, and trying to learn all of that to help Grace. And then at the time I was pastoring a church that was urban, very.
All right. So Pastor Michael, obviously this has gotten way heavier.
Yep. Yeah. Way more personal, but you see, actually, I mean, you do see where he's going with it. I think, about the anger he feels if he found out these things happened to his wife, you know, you can imagine how you'd feel if you heard about these things, right? If I heard about these sorts of things happening to my wife, yeah, I mean, I would be filled with rage. And Driscoll has obviously, spoken himself about some, and other people around him more so have spoken about his propensity for anger and yelling and just kind of, becoming very, I guess, to put it politely, intense.
Yeah.
And so you see how that could have been something that led to,
now
how he feels about this particular issue.
Now for those of us that listen to every single minute of Mark Driscoll audio around the time this sermon was preached, I don't remember if he mentioned these things. I don't think he mentioned these stories specifically in his sermon. But most of his childhood being in this really bad place, growing up in a really bad place, he talked about growing up where growing up around strip clubs, like even his wife being an assault victim, mm-hmm. He can talk about that frequently, but none of the things he's saying right now, other than using the very, very 2024 language to describe it,
yes,
triggers and all of those things, none of this is like revelatory information. Obviously connecting it to this clip, right, that's I assume what will be the kind of the newer thing here. And I actually think this is a perfect example of the problem with Mark Driscoll today. Actually, my wife just asked me about, we were on a long road trip and we just talk about everything, right? We and so
long road trips with the wife are the best, right?
Yep.
It's my favorite. We have a forced time of many, many hours where we get to just talk. I love it.
Yep. And I am fortunately, I have enough shame not to put in my Apple AirPods and listen to things. And so I, unlike Mark Driscoll, am not going to stand here and boast about I'm talking about the time I talked to my wife for a long time. What a good day.
Right.
Yeah. I muscled a man off a motorcycle. I think, but here's the problem. She asked me, she's like, what do you think about, like, what should we think about Mark Driscoll? Cause she, like a lot of people, again, no shade. I just don't interact with people there. Right. She's just like, I see his clips all the time on Instagram, right. Mm-hmm. His shorts about things where he's like, you know, he's doing reactions now, you know, similar to this, right? Like many pastors do, you know, he's doing all kinds of different content. Right. And I assume she's asking me because much of it is about, you know, he's probably right about a lot of the things mm-hmm. he says.
Right.
And so she's asking me, like, what should we think about him? Should we think that he's like, do we just think he's a liar, that he's out to deceive everyone? Do we think he is like, he really is just wrong and there's something he doesn't understand, you know, but right, is in general getting all these other things right? Is he an apostate? And I think this clip, like many things, is actually a perfect example of the actual problem that we will always have with him unless Christ, you know, removes the heart of stone. And I'm not using that in the ultimate conversion sense, as you'll find out in a minute, and grants him repentance over the things that happened when he was pastoring in the Pacific Northwest in an urban community. Right.
We all know. I think maybe we don't, though. Like, and you could, somebody asked in the Patreon group chat just about, hey, has he ever like named Mars Hill?
Right.
And I don't remember. I mean, in the stuff that we've watched, I don't remember.
He avoids it. I mean, like, I think it's actually, I think he thinks he is now able to at least, right? He was avoiding all backstory.
Yeah.
I think the big change in 2024 is Mark Driscoll is going to start mining his history, his backstory again, right? He's going he feels free enough. Those stories are,
it's far enough in the rear view mirror. And I mean, we've seen that with all of the little clips that we've been reacting to over time, with the best sermon rants that we've been watching. We see that slowly things seep in. There's little stories about times before and things that happened.
And he knows that everyone who's going to care about what Christianity Today had to say with the rise and fall of Mars Hill knows all of that.
Yep.
Better or worse. It's done.
It's out there. It's done. Yeah.
And
because it was Christianity Today that did it, and because of the particular lens that they took, bringing on people like Kristen Dumas or others, that like it clearly made it seem like, for, let's put it this way, like for those who are just, you know, conservative Bible believing Christians in the world today, as like just crazy times are, everybody on that side of the line is super skeptical of Christianity Today. We see where they're going. We see the kinds of people that they hire. We see the kinds of stuff that they write. We don't trust them at all.
Right.
Then they come out with this well-made podcast, and having, you know, kind of ridden the Mark Driscoll train for some time, having listened to so much of his stuff, having literally a podcast, the first Rise and Fall podcast. Thank you very much, Mike Cosper, for not giving us a shout out.
That's right.
But having, you know, all of that background, it was, you know, we were ideally set, I think, to spend some time listening to that, but also being able to give it somewhat of a fair hearing and give Driscoll a fair hearing, right? Yes. Like to be able to balance both of those things and think through both of those things together. And I think that the balanced approach is actually to say, well, you know, neither side is being fully honest with their intentions. Neither side is being fully upfront with what they actually think and believe. They're not being super clear. A lot of it is highly produced, so it's hard to know even exactly what they're doing. There's clearly agenda behind a lot of it, but it's not obvious. That's the difference here, right? So I was just talking to some guys earlier today. They were talking about how, you know, we just had this, apparently Matt, another thing that we'll have to find and watch together, although I heard it was like 4 hours. But the American Gospel guys did this sit down with Justin Peters and some other guy as cessationists, and then they had Sam Storms.
I saw the clips.
Where they're talking about, yes, of course, Mike Bickle went to heaven with Michael Brown and Sam Storms, which is ridiculous, everybody. That's ridiculous. But I'd love to watch that and then talk about it together. Yeah. We should at least, I mean, we can't do a full reaction to it.
Yeah, fine. A 4 hour video. The best clips, right? Yes. Like we have with many things.
Right. But one of the things, I've not watched it, but I was talking to a guy this morning, one of the guys from the book club, if anybody listens to the book club. And he was saying that like they even are unwilling to condemn Kenneth Copeland.
Right.
On that part, right? Like that to me, that's an obvious line, right? Like if you can't condemn Kenneth Copeland, a guy who mixes his own blood, whether it was fake or not, with the communion wine, right? Like, and says he's mixing his blood with Jesus' blood.
Man,
he's an evil, wicked, corrupt, like in better times, like he would be in a lot of trouble. You know, like, let's put it that way, right? Like this is an evil, evil person.
Hashtag.
There's no doubt about it. It's obvious. If it's not clear to you that Kenneth Copeland is evil, then you actually have zero discernment and you need to spend some time reading scripture and being led by those that do. That's an obvious line. I actually don't think it's as clear with somebody like a Mark Driscoll because it's a mixed bag. Now, there's obvious things that are corrupt and wrong that need to be repented of and make what he's doing like really, really problematic. Right. So I'm not trying to defend him and everything he's done or said. I'm simply saying that it's not like that line is not so clear for the average believer.
If someone asked me, what should I do? What should I think? Right. I asked my wife if my answer could be yes to all of them.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's what I asked, because here is actually, I think the thing that if the reason Mark Driscoll is not trustworthy, the reason you should be highly concerned about him. Right. The reason even me watching him cry is like, well, I don't know. Right. Like we started with, well, is this really an offhanded comment? Right. This is obviously a highly produced video. We're editing in clips. Right. Very different than, again, I'll keep using myself as the bad example. Oh, I'm just kind of speaking off the top of my head. Well, I had notes up and I was rifling through them. Right. I was saying I didn't have a plan. Obviously, I wasn't saying I remember all of these little details, right, or whatever. And now, again, we're at the point where we can't even, where his emotions, where he has been emotionally manipulative so many times, even this is...
Even the how dare you clip.
Yes. Right?
Like we pointed out, the fact that you do that multiple times with that kind of emotional intensity. Now, again, given some of this background, if that all connects and it's true, that actually, I mean, it makes sense to me that you would get worked up whenever this comes up.
Yep.
I get that. Right. Like I totally get that. I understand. But it does make it really hard to judge.
But I think and this is what I would say. And so this may be the most only useful thing we do in this reaction. I would say Mark Driscoll is in danger of being this person who comes to Jesus Christ on the last day. And Jesus says, I never knew you. But Lord, Lord, didn't I audition for a Blaze radio show as a Christian in your name? Didn't I blast bad COVID policy in your name? Didn't I, you know, do all of these good things? Didn't I plant a church in the Pacific Northwest that's helped so many people in your name? Didn't I do that again in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona in your name? I believe that is the danger he's in. I think the amount of consistency on a number of things that Mark Driscoll shows, I don't think he's literally like, well, this is an easy way to make money and get famous.
Like it's pure, right. Yeah. I think he clearly believes.
Yes. I think but he knows how to use those things to get famous. Hmm. And I think the fame and and this is likely why God has not given Michael and I fame and is probably a good thing. Those things, the lifestyle, right? When he's making $500,000 a year, I mean, you start figuring out, well, what do I have to do to maintain this lifestyle?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it'd be tough, right?
And you become protectionistic. You delude yourself.
Yeah.
And so, right, until he has again, right, it is not even that there's never a way back for him, right? But until he has repented, right, there was as bad of ecclesiology as Mars Hill and Acts 29 had at the time. There was an attempt at correction and discipline. And when you refuse it, when you decide, this is what we mean when we say there isn't salvation outside of the church, that you don't just get to go your own way, right? How dare you, in fact, how dare you go try and do that? And that's like, that is, and so because of that, his ministry is fundamentally untrustworthy in the most important way.
Right. From the start, from the get go.
So that's
now, that doesn't, like you're saying though, that doesn't mean there aren't some good things that God will bring of it. Doesn't mean there aren't people that could be saved through it. Doesn't mean that God didn't use his ministry very significantly in our lives, in the lives of many people that we know. All of those things can be true at the same time. That's really hard for us to hold on to. But the Apostle Paul says it, right? You know, Christ is preached, and there's people that preach him out of selfish ambition.
Exactly.
And that is a great danger to all of us who are in gospel ministry to remember that is an option, right? Like that's something that we might begin to do.
Right. All right. So let's keep watching. We'll see how he connects. So we will find out.
Very young. And it started off as a college ministry. And so everybody was very young, and a lot of homeless kids, a lot of punk rockers, a lot of drug use and abuse. And a lot of the men had deep-seated porn habits and sexual addiction, and they were not safe men. And a lot of the women were sexual assault victims and trauma victims and abused. And a lot of it was sometimes college campus drinking and rape culture. And so baptized a lot of young Christians. I think we baptized altogether like 10,000 in downtown Chop Zone of Seattle. And I was out preaching in bars, fraternity parties, and I was literally going to houses where homeless kids were encamped and sharing the gospel with them and climbing through, you know, kicked down doors and broken windows. I just wanted to see people meet Jesus, and his grace started talking.
All right, I got to stop it right here. Now, once again, we are getting the, like, you know, the thing they criticize me for, like, is actually like my finest hour. Right. But let me just say, like, again, if you want to say, like, let's say everything he's just said was true. Mm-hmm. Let me just say, like, then your abandonment of those people is so shameful. If you truly, like, if you truly were this exemplary of a shepherd and evangelist going into like these places in Seattle, and that is what the Lord was blessing with the way the ministry of Mars Hill was functioning in that city, and obviously why it became something we found attractive from out, it is so shameful then the way it was abandoned. It actually makes me, like, I will be madder if
those makes it worse. It doesn't make it better.
Yeah. Right?
It doesn't make it better. It may mean, there's a lot of good things that happened. Yes. Even, by the way, in the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast, which we were very critical of across the board.
Yes.
But even there's, you know, some of the folks that are like, were really critical of Mark Driscoll said, hey, early on,
yes,
we loved the community we had there. We loved the Driscolls. We loved the way that they shepherded us and cared for us, and nobody did it like that. And like early on, there were so many good things that seemed to happen. Now that could be because early on, you're all super immature and you don't know what's going on, right? You can't see it in the same way that maybe you can later. But it can also be that this was something that was good. He was doing good gospel ministry, right? Like there was good work being done. Yep. That's a possibility too. And you're right that makes it so much more devastating, actually, that you would turn your back on all of that.
Yeah. Cause right. Like if we're looking at this Mark Driscoll who is still in Seattle, right. Or whatever, right. How, whatever it took and he's went through it, or even let's say he was disciplined out of ministry and now he's just a speaker, right? He literally is just a The Blaze host. Like, I'm still actually willing to listen to that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because of those, the things you're describing, like, if I had any, like, ability to trust you, I actually want to learn from those things. Because that is exemplary in a way that that would be amazing. But here we go. I'm sure we're getting close to where this clip connects.
More publicly about her assault and her trauma, it just created, and it was very, very brave of her. It created a wave of women who felt that it was safe to talk about it. And so they started reporting to me as their pastor and us as their church, their trauma, their abuse, all that they had been through. And at this point, we were just a few years into Grace's healing and recovery process. And at that time as well, I had two daughters and love my daughters with all my heart. And the thought of men doing these things to not just daughters, but the God the Father's daughters, it just made me just furious. The week that I was in the Men in Marriage, I think that sermon might have been the sixth or seventh take of the day. I would preach, and then I would go down on the floor to be available to pray for people and talk to them. And I guess I'm 53 now, so this would have been in my 30s. I've been a senior pastor since I was in my 20s. And then I would go up and preach again. And then I'd go down on the floor to answer questions and pray for people. And that was probably the sixth or seventh sermon of the day. I preached myself literally almost to death on a few occasions. And I spent the whole day with young women coming up to me and telling me how they were raped and assaulted and abused. And some of it was by boyfriends and husbands and fathers, and some were even by pastors. And by the end of the day, I was completely emotionally devastated and angry and furious at all the damage done to women, starting with my wife. So what triggered that was a girl came up to me. It was an African-American girl. She had just turned 18.
So Pastor Michael, is he disputing Christianity Today's explanation of the clip?
Yeah, it does sound a little bit like it, right? Like what he's giving us is a different take, right? And by the way, I don't know how to adjudicate that. You would have to be there, I guess, or be able to find those videos or whoever was there.
Yeah,
right? If you were there for multiple, if you were on staff and you were there all day, they would maybe know.
That reminds us, but I thought Mike Cosper presented at least some kind of evidence that that moment basically occurred in all the services.
Yeah. Because somebody would maybe have to remind us or go back. We might have to go back and just listen to that episode. Because I don't remember either for sure, but that was my impression at least.
But the explanation he's giving is very plausible, right? That that if you had to preach this sermon and you knew you were going to be fairly fired up about it, that by the time you did it, again, even just if you did it five times, right, regardless of whatever conversations or not, you could very easily understand why you became emotional at one point.
By the way, it is just great. Like even if it wasn't on this topic,
right,
with these issues coming up, just preaching once by the end of it, usually you're pretty it takes a lot out of you.
Right.
When you preach, and if you're a pastor that sticks around and you're with your people and you're talking to people afterward and you're praying with people and you're meeting with people, you're, you know, maybe leading Sunday school, you're hanging out till near the end. It's a lot. It's a big day, right? That's a big day in it. And that's just that.
Right.
If it's like, this is a, you know, that everything is just kind of cobbled together here and I'm doing this so many times during the day, and I'm meeting with so many people in between, we can at least say it's very, you're right. It's incredibly plausible that you would feel so overwhelmed by that. And Mark Driscoll, again, we said what's the things that he has shared over the years and, the things that others have shared about him. He clearly is the kind of guy that, as he, you know, gets maybe more worked up, more tired, exhausted, that leads to more anger, right? Like like he says, becoming more furious over the day. And by the way, this is something that is hard for pastors, is when you hear from people about really horrible things that happened to them, have happened to them, are happening to them. Like you have to bear that. You do bear it, right? Whether or not you've been involved at all, right? When one of your people does confide some kind of, horrible thing that's happened to them and confide that to you, man, it's hard because you have to now carry that with them in a way.
Yeah.
And so anyway, yeah, like you're saying, it's right. I see how you could get to that point if that's the case. But I thought I remember that too on the Cosper podcast. And that was what was interesting about that, I think, for both of us, is that was revelatory because we did not know that. We didn't realize that was something that had been going on all day.
Right.
And maybe one way that you could synthesize those two, and I know I'm trying to bring everything together and say, hey, we all kind of have agreement, don't we? We can all be friends. And I know that we can't be, but there is one way that you could bring those things together, at least one. You could just say, he did say similar things, become upset multiple times, like throughout the day. It was just at this one where they caught that clip that he was extra intense, right? Like it was far more, anger coming out and intense emotions coming out than in other clips.
Yep. I am going to, so they have the podcast, Christianity Today has now transcribed the podcast. So I am going to go through and quick do a, like, find it in the document and see if I can find the line that where they explain.
Yeah, that would be great.
Of that clip so that we can fact check ourselves and Mark Driscoll here live and not necessarily fact check if the evidence is rather light. But yeah, I do think again, and I'm gonna hit this again, and if anything, this is just a, like, this will be an encouragement to me as a young pastor. I can especially, you might not know it here on the podcast where I play the Joker of the Reformed Church. I'm a big softy deep down. And I would guess when I was doing my internship where Pastor Michael is, I don't want it to be more because I don't want to be primarily an emotional preacher, but I'd say probably about four times a year, I like have some kind of an emotional break while I'm preaching. And I think one, it can obviously have to do with what's going on in your own life, but what he's describing here with when I know what I'm talking about and who I'm talking to.
Yes.
And I'm trying to talk to them.
Yep.
And you know that, like, you are either trying to give someone hope or you're giving someone that something that may feel like a dagger, people you truly care about. Again, no shame, right? Obviously, again, it becomes manipulative when this is what you always are. This is everything. This is all the time.
Right.
But I do believe this is part of it. And also, this is why it's shameful to leave those people, right? Like, this is why leaving those people, especially if this is a call given to you by Jesus, you don't get to do, right? This is why in the early church, when they were facing persecution, the only person who didn't get to run was the pastor. Until the lights were out on the church, you were there. You were arrested to your call.
Right.
That's your job. You go down with it. And again, right, that's why this is, the dismantling of Mars Hill in 2 weeks is such a tragic story, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
All right. We will play the last 2 minutes of this and I will search a transcript. If I find something, you'll certainly hear about it as we react. Let me pull up the video and here we go.
Team, this was before the last service of the day. And she said, Pastor Mark, can I talk to you about my dad? And I said, yeah, honey, you can do that. And And I said, she said, I never knew my dad. My dad raped my mom. And she said, so I was born out of rape. And my mom told me I was never allowed to meet my dad because he wasn't a safe man. And she said, when I turned 18, I found out who my biological father was. And I scheduled a meeting with him. And this was a gal I knew. I was her pastor. She was in our church. I think she was a college freshman. And I said, oh, so you got to meet your dad? And she said, yeah, I did. I flew out and I met my dad. And I said, what happened? And she said, he raped me. Mm. I honestly started crying so hard, I threw up and then preached a sermon. And so ever since then, yeah, some of my critics and those who say I'm a misogynist and hate women, they're like, look at how angry this guy is. I'm like,
oh man,
why isn't every sane man filled with the Spirit this angry? And if this is happening to God's daughters, how come nobody's pissed?
So, Pastor Michael, that obviously got very, very dark. We can say there's another thing we should learn from this, and I did find the excerpt, which we will read in a moment. There probably two things. I'll make one criticism, and then we'll go to another positive thing before we go to the fact check. Here's my criticism. Man, maybe there are people who are like, look at this clip, look at this angry misogynist. That's just not the criticism. I'm sorry. Like, it is a gaslight to say this is the, like, if you've listened to what.
But it's not 100% because, like, Christian Today, yeah, that is one of the main tactics they used, right? Like, that is one of the main criticisms that they used. And so, yeah, if that's who he's talking to, right, makes sense. But you're right that there's a lot of us who are not making that criticism at all.
Yeah. And that's just not what's going on here. Right. Like, and again, right, there are people who accuse him of, like, I even think the people who accuse him of, like, hating women, right, as a misogynist, I don't even think they think this clip, like, is really even related to that.
Yeah.
Now, again, maybe people think it is. Maybe people, I assume probably people back in the day accused him, this is a sign of lack of self-control or whatever. But again, I don't really agree with any of that. But what I think now, so there's my criticism. I think this is basically a gaslight. Like, this isn't really what's going on. If you've listened to me for the last 42 minutes, you know, obviously we're not like, that we haven't at any point said, well, the big problem with this clip was that he was mad about women being hurt, right? Can you believe it? Here's the positive thing. If Driscoll is a hireling who fled, that doesn't mean there isn't a lot of this in our churches, even in our good churches, to deal with. And we should be trying to deal with it and trying to counsel through it. And if we're not, we probably do have our heads in the sand. Now, again, not every church has the context Driscoll's church at, right? I'm not saying that, like, this is going to be, you know, that this is equally prevalent or that a pastor who is not counseling someone in this situation is unfaithful. I'm not making any major claims. What I'm saying, this is the
world. This is happening, right? Like, there's sexual abuse, there's rape, there's all kinds of wickedness going on all around us. And it does seem to be increasing in the society that we're in, right? As more and more boundaries are taken down, as more and more families are falling apart. Like, it does seem like this is something that you are going to encounter. If you are not, then it's a little shocking, right? Like, it is a little shocking if you've not seen any of that.
Yes. All right. So let's head to the,
and you should be mad. He's right about that.
Right.
Right. Like, that is true. Right. This is what makes part of that very compelling, right? He is correct that should make you mad about sin, right? About these things happening.
And one of the people in the chat mentioned that he talks about rape culture. Yes. Again, it is interesting because Driscoll is such a, is such a definitely intelligent user of culture. One of the big things you notice in this clip is that the way he would have talked about, again, if we went back and watched that whole sermon from 15 years ago or whatever it was, the way all of the language he uses to talk about it will have completely shifted. Like the way he will but he's always done that, right? He's always used psychology and always used those things. Okay, so let us compare that with what Mike Cosper and Christianity Today began. So from the moment I first watched this, something about
this is Mike Cosper. For those who aren't watching, because we'll probably put this out on the podcast feed. This is Mike Cosper speaking.
Yep, I will probably only read Mike what I'm reading. It will all be Mike Cosper unless I'll make a specific mention otherwise. From the moment I first watched this, speaking of the "How dare you" clip, something about it felt a little off to me. In working on this project, I've probably heard it a few dozen times, and that feeling only increased. First thing I think is the degree to which he's addressing the camera in the video, not deliberately, not cheating towards it, but he scans the room. His eyes just keep landing on its lens. By the time the camera has been in the room for years, I'd also say I've watched a whole lot of Mark, and there's something in the body language that isn't quite right either, which, as we just heard, could be very explainable given the emotional state he's in. It's like he's borrowing someone else's coat. I think what got me more recently is this element is that it seems this thing that seems tagged in on the end. And then he does this, which is obviously the weird thing, which I do remember in the sermon, right? And this is a quote from Mark Driscoll, which he said made it seem really weird. "We're going to do something we've never done. We're going to pass the plate. You can give your tithes and offerings. Early in the church in 1995, 96, I didn't want anyone to think bad of me. I've not led well in this area. We have people at church come every week. They don't worship. They don't participate. We'll pass the plate. If you're disconnected, please fill out a visitor card." Mike Cosper talks about how that seems maybe cynical. But here's the major quote. "Well, it turns out there were 5 services on Sunday, and I was able to confirm that Mark screamed just like this at all 5. Someone who is intimately familiar with these operations confirmed that the whole thing was planned and rehearsed. It was Mark made for TV. I'm yet to meet someone for whom it was the pivot point in our life." And I remember you and I talking about this, like that comment by Mike Cosper seems completely out of touch, because I know for ourselves and many other people, this was a pretty pivotal.
We didn't know it all. Yeah. We did not know it all from a distance. Obviously we were not there. We're not, but from a distance, we did not realize that,
but it was pretty pivotal to me. Right. I can see saying that. They're probably out there. Don't get me wrong, Mike Cosper. I'm here for an interview. I just haven't heard from them myself. Mike Cosper, I made an entire podcast responding to you. I don't know how I could make it any clearer. I suppose there's an echo of it in that Saturday morning when Mark called the men from the Paradox and screamed at them for a couple of hours. But if so, this latter one is the mass market reproduction. The intimacy of the Paradox and the performative nature of the other one just make them categorically different. Here's what I find more disturbing. There's a prop in this sermon. It's never quite on the screen, but it's there the whole time. It's not the video over the side, and it's not something in the background. It's not even on the platform at all. The prop is the woman that Mark Driscoll is defending. Listen again. Where is she? Where does she go? What are her options? She feels trapped in her in a dead end or abusive if she's alone. It's all radio silent on that front, because she's a prop for Mark's primary audience, men. Even in the closing prayer, she's a prop again. So this is what Mark Driscoll's talking about.
Yeah, it is. He is responding directly to what Mike Cosper said. I did not remember this part of it. And by the way, it's not a fair criticism at all if he's preaching a sermon with this intent, right? Like, yeah, he is at this point addressing those who may be sinning by abusing someone, right? Like that he's specifically men who may be abusing their girlfriends or spouses or other women in their lives, right? Their daughters, whoever it is. That's who he's talking to. I don't think that's this is where we run into this problem. It is not that it's so hard for us to think this way. I know it's really hard for us, but we have to be able to do this. It's not, it's either Mike Cosper's right or Mark Driscoll's right, right? One is they've got the truth, right? And that's it, right? I'm on his side or his side. In both these cases, in what we just watched and what you just read in our experience of this, like you see that actually it's a lot, a lot more nuance to it. And it's not like clearly Christianity Today, Mike Cosper, have an agenda behind right. what they're doing, whether they realize it or not. I don't know that Mike Cosper, he seems like a decent guy. I don't know that he went out of his way to like try to, you know, propagandize people, but it is propaganda. It is being used with a particular agenda that he's probably just imbibed like everybody else. But I do think that you get similar things then on Mark Driscoll's side too, right? Like he is responding to Christianity Today, who maybe more of the people that are getting in his circles now actually do hear, listen to, have some connection to, or at least within their families, right? Within the mainstream evangelical world where he's drawing a lot of people in, they're the people that have maybe heard that podcast. Right. And so he's now trying to say, no, here's my side of it. And actually that doesn't sound like that really paints you as just purely in the right and the good.
Right.
And that's it. Right. Like that's also a little weird.
Again, I think, it's
hard to know. Mike Cosper says, I verified it.
Right.
I don't know who you verify it with. Hey, if you were there, by the way, if somebody sees this online, hears it online, because we do get a lot more people when we talk Mark Driscoll things and Rise and Fall of Mars Hill and all of that. If you are one of those people that were there for multiple services, you heard this, you know, it was rehearsed. Hey, I'd love to know. Or just reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you.
Or if Mike Cosper wants to tell me how he verified this.
Yeah, come on, Mike, come on the show, man. We would love to have Mike Cosper on the show.
If you want to tell me how you verified this, I'll believe you. Because guess what, right? When Pastor Michael was saying it's, you know, the world is more complicated than what we these things make it is, right? Can I basically believe that Mark Driscoll actually thought he was doing something right in challenging men and defending women? And it still be performative and manipulative?
Yep.
Answer is yes.
Yes.
Right. And that's the danger. That's why the human heart, pride, that's why this is so that's why it's so dangerous. Is that you can convince yourself that I am doing so much of the right thing that all of these other things don't matter, right? This is what the Pharisees were doing. We must defend holiness. Mark Driscoll might be a pretty good example of a modern day Pharisee, right? Like the part of the right religion, doing the right things, defending the right things, and doing it in a way that you end up finding out you were opposing Jesus. You were opposing the Messiah the whole time. That's the danger, right? That is what we're looking at here. So Pastor Michael, we went live.
Dude, we went live, man. And we maybe have as many live viewers right now, by the way, as we've ever had.
Apparently, this is a good time to go live.
Evidently. Didn't realize it. Helps when we have no idea. Instead of trying to plan it ever, we should just do it this way. According to StreamYard, we've got almost 40 people watching. So,
well, thank you for joining us. Rate and review this show for $3 a month. If you are a person just joining us, listening to us react to this Mark Driscoll content, we have about 30 episodes of us listening to his recent sermons. The last one, maybe the pinnacle of our ability to react to him. It was much more lighthearted than this one because the content was much more lighthearted than this one. However, if I will end saying this, if you can verify, if we now have two competing claims, if you can verify that Mark Driscoll either did the exact same presentation 5 times in a row, or if you want to provide me some line of evidence to believe that or not, right, to confirm either or deny that those stories, I would love to hear from you. So maybe we will clip this or clip the first time where we said this and tag people on Twitter because we're here for truth. HDY, we hope you're here with us. We do hope this was helpful in some way to you. We had no idea what we were coming to. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We are going to hang out and see you later.